This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Alan Gibbons. How are you, Alan?
I'm good, thank you.
You're the Executive Director of the International Wine Spirit Competition.
I am indeed. I have been for the last 3 years.
So, International Wine Spirit Competition is three big competitions in the UK. Your one, International Wine Spirit Competition, yep. International Wine Challenge, and yep. Decanter. I would say they're the main ones.
They are, and I mean, we're very lucky in that they're probably the three premier ones in the world as well, never mind the UK.
Yeah, there's a lot of regional competitions, but we won't talk about those ones. Okay, let's just talk a wee bit about the International Wine Spirit Competition. You guys have got a very strange way of releasing your results. You know, we're currently recording this at the London International Wine Fair, and Decanter released their results. Yep. International Wine Challenge released their results. You guys just released half your results.
That's right.
What are you trying to do? Tease people or something, mate?
No, we took a decision about 3 years ago now that from talking to wine producers, particularly in the Southern Hemisphere, they were saying, look, we understand wine competitions. We like entering wine competitions. The biggest problem we have is because, in essence, what a wine competition historically has done is draw a line in the sand, say, get your entries in by then, judges them, publishes the results. That's too early for the Southern Hemisphere. And what happens is you're judging last year's wines in many ways. So the commercial value is negligible because they've already sold that product.
Yep.
So what we did was we changed our deadlines. Because the big difference between us and most other competitions is we actually exist all year round as a business. So we can do that. We don't come together for a month or something like that. So we just moved our tastings for the Southern Hemisphere to September, October, mainly September. And that meant that in the first year, we got a whole bunch of whites in from New Zealand, for example. It also means that we're actually the first international competition that judges that year's Sauvignons from New Zealand, so it's a really good advantage for us, and certainly it means that the wineries themselves can make hay when they win at our competition.
Oh, okay, it's quite good actually, although it's particularly because you get, like if you use, say, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc as an example, it does age, or can age quite quickly, not so bad under screw cap these days, but it does age, and availability can become a problem towards the end of the year, really, for them.
Hmm. So it does. I mean, it's up to the winery. They can obviously hold things back if they wish to and enter them the following year, but it does get us those first really fresh Sauvignon Blancs, particularly, it has to be said. And it's been a real boon for us, and we've certainly not had any bad feedback. It's all been positive about that change.
Excellent, excellent. So how do you do your judging? Do you do it in two flights twice a year? How does the process of from asking for entries through to the judging and then the delivery of the results, how would that process work usually?
We do realistically three tranches of judging, and we'll probably start judging around about March time, and we will finish our Northern Hemisphere judging about 2 weeks before this fair, which means there's an awful lot of work in the last 2 weeks getting all those results together.
Yep.
We'll start doing our spirits judging in about a fortnight's time. But our Southern Hemisphere won't start until July time, and then that will run through until the back end of the year, September time, for New Zealand and Australia specifically. The judging itself is done, the phrase we've used in the past is double blind. And what that means is we don't use bagged bottles. All wines are decanted in a separate room, so that all the judge will ever see at the IWSC is a numbered glass.
That's quite interesting, because I've done judging at other competitions in the past, International Wine Challenge, and we were doing a flight of Italians.
Yeah.
And we knew which ones are IGT and which ones were DO, because IGT allowed screw cap, DOCG and DOC aren't. So we sort of immediately had an idea of the quality position of the wines just by looking at the top of the bottle, really.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, certainly, if you look at the spirits business, for example, where there's probably more variety in terms of bottle shape and things in many ways, specific to brand, if you think about the Johnny Walker square bottle, you know, if you're from the spirits business, you know what that product is from 2 inches sticking out the bottom of top of a bag. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
And we wanted to take that out. So as I say, everything is poured in a separate room and it's just a numbered glass. So the best thing that we ever have is when we announce the results, and some of the judges are kind of, oh, wow, I didn't realize I actually voted for that. I mean, there was one year they were convinced they were drinking one wine, and it turned out to be an entirely separate product. And had they known that, human nature suggests it would have potentially influenced their decision, but it didn't.
Some of the competitions, they tell you about the flight. It might be a load of Italian Anez grape or something like that.
Oh, yeah. What we do is they know that their taste, they know the country, they know the region. The way we do the tasting is we do it by vintage, variety, and region. So in many ways, we start off with lots of individual regional competitions in a funny sort of way, and then build that up so that they do know what they're looking for. The way we like to say it is what we're looking for is the best expression of a particular region and vintage, etc. So it's important that they do have that information.
What about if some wines the public don't like? I've just been in a meeting talking about different wine critics and versus what the public like, and some wine critics get quite far up their own bums in terms of what they like, because they're exposed to so many wines that they land up liking quite niche things that most people don't like. Do you find that's an issue with your judges? Do you find that some wines, whilst technically brilliant, and a lot of the people in the trade might go, wow, this is a really interesting wine, the public may not necessarily like that?
Well, I think potentially, but we try and get rid of that issue. And the reason we get rid of that issue is because of we're obviously putting things through flights, through panels. I mean, obviously, if it's an individual writer's view, then it is a very subjective view. They may be hugely experienced, but it's still a subjective view. We do try and leaven that a little bit in terms of having panels of seven people, for example.
Who are your judges? How do you select your judges?
We've got about 300 judges, I would think, on our books. Some of them are very specialized, some of them more generalized. They're everything from winemakers, distillers, blenders, buyers. It's across the trade, writers. It is literally across the trade.
Okay. And do, I suppose, the wine people judge the wines and the spirits people judge the spirits? Do you get any crossover?
There are some people, but very few, to be fair. We have an independent technical and judging committee, which is headed up by David Wrigley, who's Master of Wine and works for the WSET as his day job. And David makes sure that every single judge goes through an induction program. It doesn't matter who you are. If you want to judge for us, you have to go through an induction program.
Okay. What does that entail?
It's just about understanding, calibrating, understanding what their views are, understanding what their experiences are. The other thing that we've started to do last year, which was hugely successful for us, is an idea we stole, to be fair, from Australia, which was we started doing associate judges, which is people studying for their WSET diploma are allowed to come and judge at the IWSC. We don't include their results, but it gives them exposure to really experienced tasters and a fabulous variety of wines that they don't have to go and buy themselves.
Yeah.
And that's worked really well for us. In fact, two of those judges last year associate judges came to become full judges for us.
Oh, nice. One of the things I get frustrates the heck out of me when the judging season comes around is it matches beautifully with the hay fever season. And so whenever I've decided whether I'm going to do any judging or not, I can't say, well, I can't put too much time into this because there's a risk. I'm just going to write off a day. I can't smell anything, can't taste anything, and it's going to be a waste of time. You know, and that bothers me quite a lot. Do you find that's a problem? Because the wine industry is so anti-hay fever people.
I think it's one of the issues. I mean, you know, there is so much that can affect a really good palate in terms of it may be the hay fever, it may be a cold.
Yeah.
I mean, we're very strict. When you're tasting down at the IWSC in our own tasting rooms, the girls aren't allowed to wear perfume. The guys aren't allowed to wear aftershave.
Yep.
We do keep it as clean as we possibly can. So it's obviously an issue, and we do rely on the judges to self-calibrate to a certain extent. I mean, it's interesting, you talk about things that affect judges. We did some work last year where we looked at humidity, we looked at pressure, we looked at sunshine, just to see whether that affected people's judging. And actually it didn't. We found that people were really consistent generally.
Yeah.
The biggest change we found was that, as you know, people in the wine industry have fairly strong views on wine, as we discussed a moment ago, where a couple of the judges had a robust discussion about a particular wine, and we found that that emotional charge did affect judging later on in terms of the scores given. So that was really interesting.
I can imagine if you're not in a good mood,
yeah,
you're going to be harder.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. What once the judging's finished,
yeah,
and you've got the results out, how do people make use of your results?
We obviously, the standard way is, as all competitions do, is we do the bottle stickers. One thing that we did for the first time last year was we actually give artwork away. It's free. It's on a CD-ROM, so as part of our winner's pack. Because one of the things that, especially with the big companies, that putting the stickers on is problematic. And actually what they want to do is use the artwork of the medals, etc., on their posters, on their point of sale and things like that.
Or so, even change the label.
Yeah. So one of the things that we do as part of a winner's pack is you get the artwork to that year's medals. And obviously from our perspective, given that we change the date on the medal every year, it has a kind of built-in obsolescence. But I think it's much more user-friendly for people.
Sure. A lot of the wine competitions have been tied, and you were tied to a magazine, Harper's, until things changed recently. Do you want to just give us an overview of what actually happened? Because you guys used to own Harper's, didn't you?
Well, the RWSC and Harper's were owned by the same company.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting in that, unlike some of the other competitions, our relationship with Harper's, even though it was an internal relationship, they were our media partner, and that's how we did it. Because the IWSC, unlike, say, the Challenge and Decanter, was set up as a separate company 40 years ago now, we've always been very proud and very, very careful with its independence. So Harper's was our media partner. When the business sold that product to William Reed, we changed media partner, and our new media partner is Drinks Business. So the actual change for us probably wasn't as much as it may have appeared from the outside.
Oh, okay. So you still have a media partner?
We do, yes.
And how important is that for a wine competition?
It's very important because it helps us put our message out to the trade. It helps us publicise in terms of the results. And it's a way of talking to the trade. And especially with the Drinks Business, given they're such an international publication, it's about talking to the trade on a global basis. So that's important to everybody, I think.
Do you have a media partner for the public consumers?
No, we don't. Well, certainly not at the moment, let me put it that way. It's something that we have looked at and probably will pursue in the future.
Okay. What's the future for the IWSC?
The future is great, I have to say. I mean, in the 3 years that I've been there, we've grown every single year, and it's been double-digit growth.
In terms of volume of wines tasted?
In terms of entries from our perspective. So, you know, we've had a really good time. The future for us is we've just completely relaunched our website, made it much more user-friendly. There's a great search engine on there now. So we start refining things like that. Next year, we're looking at doing some overseas tastings for the IWSC. This year, our president is Sir Ian Good from Edrington, the whiskey manufacturers. And for the first time, we're actually doing a spirits dinner in Scotland in July. So we've got some really interesting new stuff coming along. So, you know, life does begin at 40 from our perspective.
Fair enough. Excellent. All right, Alan, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks very much.